Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to House Call, talking equity markets with UBS Asset Management. For this month, glad to be joined by Jeff Hans, Senior Portfolio Manager of the Houseview Equity Portfolios, as well as Dominique Shager, Senior Equity Investment Specialist, both from UBS Asset Management. So with that, Dom, I will now pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Jeff. Welcome back.
I hope everyone is enjoying their summer. It's certainly going really, really fast. But with that, we have so much to cover today that I'll get right on it. So Jeff, let's start with a macro overview. Over the last 6 to 8 weeks, we've seen quite a bit of volatility in the market, and that has some investors jittery. Has the team's views changed in the macro environment?
Hey, Dom. Well, thanks for having us on. Happy to join today, join the call. So if you simply looked at the markets on August 1st and then looked today, you'd say, oh, wow, it's been a pretty good move in the marketplace over that three-week span. But to your point, there's been quite a bit of volatility underneath the hood. So let's unpack that for a minute. In the very beginning of the month, the volatility index, or the VIX, was around 23. And just in a matter of a couple days, it spiked to about 65 and then back down to 23. A handful of days after that. That spike in the VIX was only seen three other times historically, or the magnitude of that spike. So go back to the days of COVID as one, the Great Financial Recession was another period of time, and then back to the 1987 crash. And so pretty meaningful and some interesting company there. Yeah, there's a number of reasons why. I think I want to focus more on some of the macro concerns, because I think that was part of the reason why you saw such a spike in volatility and a sell-off, a temporary sell-off in the markets. And so you had some softer economic data early in August. You had a softer than expected jobs number, and then the ISM data, which is essentially a survey that measures manufacturing activity, came in well below expectations. That's a decent leading indicator for future business activity. And I think, yeah, that was a big driver of the spike in volatility that we've seen. Now, I think it's important at the macro level to keep things in perspective here, right? This wasn't the first time that we've seen economic data come softer than expected in the U.S., right? We've actually seen over the last 3 to 4 months, that's kind of been the trend. Growth has been softening relative to prior years. And when you take a step back, it's actually been a big factor as to why the inflationary data that we track has also been softer than expected. You also have to keep in mind that market moves in the near term can often be influenced by positioning. And you had a pretty strong performance in the month of July. And I think there was an expectation that was starting to get built in that month heading into August that the Fed would begin to cut and economic growth would begin to lift. And so on the heels of that weaker ISM data and that weaker jobs data, it just seemed to catch investors off guard and drove some heavy selling pressure. So I think that's sort of a long and winding lead into kind of our macro view. Our macro view has not changed, Dom. That's the initial question you asked, right? We continue to think that the economy is heading into a soft landing. What you have to keep in mind is that a soft landing means that things are slowing, right? And that ties into my prior comments that you've seen economic growth soften over the last few months. And so, look, I think there's going to be questions from this point forward as to whether, you know, that means the slowing is indicating that we're heading into a recession or not. And I think that's going to be the hard part as we kind of go through this. Again, our base case is that we will not go into a recession, that we will navigate a soft landing. I'd say there's a number of things that give us that confidence. You know, first off, many of the cyclical companies in our portfolios aren't seeing key trends or leading indicators such as orders rolling over. They're just sort of seeing things that are trudging along the bottom. So, you know, we look at analog semiconductor companies, we look at short cycle industrial companies, we look at home builders. You know, they're all kind of commenting that, yeah, demand's kind of sluggish and not really getting worse, but not really meaningfully improving. You know, we recently met with the CEO of one of the major major investment banks, who, you know, their core business is focused on M&A. And, you know, he said, look, M&A activity is kind of beyond the green shoots now. It's starting to recover, but it's not really accelerating meaningfully. It's just sort of this gradual signs of improvement. So, yeah, I'd say it's, things are just kind of rolling along the bottom in these more cyclical industries. I think, you know, looking at the consumer, you're seeing a mixed bag, right? You hear companies in the fast food space talking about traffic remaining negative. There's an energy drink company that said, you know, their consumer base remains very challenged. On the flip side, you know, there's other companies that are saying, hey, our consumer is in really good shape. And I think those that are geared towards more of the high-end consumer tend to be in a little bit of a better position. So, you know, sort of a mixed bag, but not getting worse from when we connect the dots listening to the companies that we own in our portfolios. Another factor, we look at credit metrics, and there's really no signs of deterioration there. You know, you're seeing credit card delinquencies have stabilized, credit supply is pretty ample, default rates seem to be leveling off a bit. That's a good sign. And then the third is job trends and the consumer rate, and job trends are softening for sure. And Jerome Powell was out, you know, talking just this morning at the widely anticipated Jackson Hole conference, and he noted that some of the pressures in the job market are really more a function of increased supply of individuals, but also companies that, you know, the pace of hiring just has slowed. So you're not really seeing layoffs, you know, picking up meaningfully. It's a good sign for sure. And on the consumer, I talked about this a little bit, but, you know, you have this mixed bag where the low end continues to struggle. The high end consumer remains in good shape. I think the number that we look at is the top 20% of income earners in the U.S. account for something like 40% of discretionary spending. And so, you know, if that high-income consumer remains in good shape, they drive a lot of the spending in our country and I think can help sustain growth at a pretty decent clip. So, you know, mixed bag, but not rolling over on the job side and the consumer side. So bottom lining it all, Dom, I'd say, you know, we think volatility could be somewhat elevated. You have elections coming up as well, don't forget. you know, we think sluggish economic data would probably be perceived as a negative, but if the view is that the Fed is going to begin cutting interest rates soon, you know, I think that can offer some support for risk assets such as stocks at this point.
So you just brought up an excellent topic, the rate cutting. So last week, inflation report came in at 2.9 year over year, still higher than the Fed's 2% long-term target, but in line with expectations and much lower than what we've seen in the past. So looking ahead, do you think the Fed will begin to cut rates soon? And what areas of the market are best positioned to benefit from a rate cut?
Yeah, the timing of this question is good because Jerome Powell just basically, he basically said that they're going to be cutting soon. So for me to say no is a silly response. So I'm going to say yes, we do think that. No, I'd say like inflation's been coming in softer than expected the past few months, right? I sort of alluded to that before. And I think that's begun to coincide with growing expectations that the Fed would begin to cut in September. And I think Powell's comments just this morning imply that that's likely the case at this point. You know, I think we have to keep in mind the reason why the Fed would begin cutting interest rates, meaning are they doing it because inflation is moderating and is now closer to their target rate, or are they doing it because the economy is rolling over? You know, in his comments this morning, which I thought were interesting, you know, I think he expressed some concern around the employment picture, right? As I mentioned, it doesn't look like, you know, you're seeing massive amounts of layoffs, which is a good sign, but they're watching that closely, right? And so I think that will probably determine inflation plus the job picture will likely determine the pacing of rate cuts. So we think it'll probably start in September. And then I think the million-dollar question is, you know, what's the pacing and magnitude of rate cuts thereafter? I think, you know, when we've caught, you know, I think you asked the question what parts of the market are going to be positioned, right? I think we've caught some glimpses as to how the markets might react in a scenario where the Fed does begin to cut rates and the economy is holding up well. You know, if we use the month of July as sort of a microcosm for that, you had softer than expected inflation that month, and you know, the economy was doing okay. You saw value stocks outperform growth by about 7%, right? Pretty meaningful. I think it's interesting because I think in a lot of the cyclical sectors that are more rate sensitive, we've witnessed these rolling recessions over the past 18 months. And so if rates do move lower, you know, our view is that, you know, you could see cyclical earnings power really begin to move higher. And so industries like housing and building construction, capital markets, short cycle industrials, autos, analog semis probably start to act better in that scenario. And these industries are, you know, certainly more classic value versus growth.
CP, you mentioned a little bit about what you've been hearing on the streets lately, but with over 90% of the S&P 500's market cap having reported, Q2 earnings season is coming to a close. Any interesting anecdotes you can share with us?
Well, NVIDIA will report next week, so that's probably like the final 10%. But so that'll be interesting for sure. That's right. I said this before on these calls, that the part of my job that I always enjoy is, you know, we're owning companies across various industries. And so, you know, you listen to kind of what's going on from a multitude of CEOs across their respective businesses, and you can connect the dots to, I think, you know, draw a picture at a high level on the economy. And so, you know, if you sort of bucket it out, you know, during earnings season, some cyclical company takeaways, you know, I kind of pointed this out earlier, I'd say, but, you know, analog semiconductor companies like Texas Instruments and Microchip and some others, short cycle industrial companies like Emerson and Ingersoll Rand, you know, they're all pointing out that trends are still a bit sluggish, but they're certainly not getting worse. You know, you look at home builders, they noted that, you know, home builders are very cyclical segment of the economy and an important one for sure as it relates to housing. You know, they a lot of them commented that order trends were sluggish in May and June, but July picked up, and then August trends have been pretty good. And then you just had a July new home sales data came out this morning, which showed a very stronger than expected result. That's a good sign. Credit card companies, another very cyclical area of the economy, you know, commented that billings growth has been healthy and holding up fairly well. IT service companies, very similar, very cyclical area within the tech sector, have commented that things are not getting worse, but demand overall just kind of feels sluggish. So, you know, the cyclical takeaways are similar to what I was alluding to earlier, where, you know, you're just sort of seeing things not really sort of hockey stick recover. It's just sort of trudging along the bottom. Maybe rate cuts kind of catalyze fundamentals improve ultimately, but we'll have to wait and see. And on the consumer, you know, I talked about this earlier, things are still kind of a mixed bag, right? You had McDonald's traffic in the U.S. has been negative. You know, Monster Energy commented on their earnings call that the consumer is fairly stretched. You know, on the flip side, you have companies like Chipotle that are putting up pretty good sales growth. Uber said that their consumer has never been stronger. I think an interesting thing from Walmart's earnings just last week was that the low-end consumer is struggling but not getting worse, right? And then BJ's Wholesale, which is a discount club, made a similar comment on their call yesterday that, you know, things are not getting worse on the low end. They're just sort of hovering around the bottom. So I think those are some of the main takeaways from earnings season. You know, banks, I'd say, you know, which reported very early in earnings season about a month or so ago, you know, very discretionary, obviously. They're talking about the consumer holding up fairly well, spending patterns holding up, credit conditions remaining in pretty good shape. So, those are some of the key takeaways, I'd say.
So overall, it feels cautiously optimistic on the future. So changing gears for a minute, you did touch on this a second ago, but the Russell 1000 Value Index has lagged the Russell 1000 growth by a little over 8% year to date. On past calls, Jeremy has provided some insights as to some of the drivers. Yet, could you give us a quick refresher, and do you expect this trend to continue?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's something I get quite a bit. One of the portfolios I manage is a large cap value portfolio, and value has lagged growth by a meaningful amount for sure. So it's a pretty wide underperformance this year, as you point out, especially when you consider that value lagged growth by more than 30% in 2023. So, compounding on last year's underperformance, just continuing to lag. I'd say the factors behind value lagging this year, you know, are really a function of investors really just following where the earnings growth has been. So, you know, you look at technology and growth stocks, and particularly those companies that are tied to AI, you've seen outsized earnings growth there compared to the market broadly. And I alluded to this earlier, right? But the more cyclical segments of the market just, you know, have been seeing more anemic rates of growth. And so you have this very wide gap between growth stock earnings and value stock earnings. And I think that helps largely explain value's underperformance. What drives a reversal there? I'd say, you know, and we saw this in July. So I think expectations of a cyclical earnings rebound are important. And if you look at consensus estimates for the MAG 7 stocks, there is an expectation that the rate of growth will begin to moderate over the coming quarters. And on the flip side of that, there's an expectation that cyclical companies will begin to see the rate of earnings begin to accelerate over the coming quarters. And, you know, if it's as simple as investors following the direction of earnings growth, you know, that also could be a driver of this reversal. And so, you know, we think value stocks look really cheap compared to growth. It's a great hedge for portfolios for investors that are overweight to growth as well. But those are some of the things that we think can unlock some of that reversal. And you know, we think there's probably a better backdrop ahead for value for sure.
So before we close the call, if our listeners should take one key point from this discussion, what should it be?
One key takeaway I would say is, you know, we continue, you know, despite some of the turbulence in the economic data of late, you know, we continue to remain of the view that a soft landing is likely. In that context, there will be volatility, right, because economic data is slowing. And you know, we ultimately think that with the Fed cutting and a soft landing likely, that should drive more of a broadening out of market performance. And so I think it's always important to assess your holdings and your portfolios, ensure that you're not taking on undue risk, and having, you know, diverse exposure is often a good outcome for clients. So that's probably the one takeaway I'd offer at this point.
So with that, Jeff, thank you again for your insights. Siobhan, that's a wrap from us. Until next month, thank you.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.